putting it all together.
Ed Gein is a guy in Wisconsin.
Senate Agriculture and Veterans Budget and Policy Committee will come to order. Today, members, we're going to take another look at the Veterans Home in Minneapolis. Those of you that were with us last year, we had a meeting on that, trying to make some progress, and before we're done today, we're going to find out if progress was made or if progress was not made.
I can't hear you back there.
Okay, now can you all talk louder if I can? Okay, first I want to read a statement that I've been kind of working on and to kind of set the pace today to what we're going to be trying to uncover or solve. The Health Department survey uncovered some serious deficiencies at the Minneapolis Vets Home. These cover a range of health care concerns, including medication errors, failure to have developed a comprehensive assessment of individual health needs, failure to reposition patients to avoid pressure ulcers, the lack of appropriate physical therapy, failure to develop individual toileting regimes, infection control concerns, lack of dining room assistance for residents, failure to address the privacy and security concerns raised by residents, and failure to respond to grievances filed by the residents. These are serious issues pertaining to the quality of health care our veterans receive, as well as the quality of life issue. We're here today, members, as I said, to learn more about these problems, to hear the plan of action from the Minnesota Veterans Home Board to these remedies. Members, these are the sanctions that the Health Department put together. You can look at them if you want to. We can send them around. But I think we'll start right out now with the Health Department, if they are here and if they would come forward and walk us through. Maybe not always complaints, but a broad spectrum of these complaints. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Darcy Miner, and I'm the Division Director for the Division of Compliance Monitoring at the Minnesota Department of Health. Our licensing and certification staff is comprised mainly of nurses. We also have dietitian and social workers on staff. Those surveyors go out and inspect or survey nursing homes, both those which are Medicare certified and those which are licensed under state licensure only. The Minnesota veterans homes, including the one in Minneapolis, fall into that latter category, being only under state licensure. I thought I would do a very high-level reminder of some of the history of this. Just going back as far as June 2005, our Office of Health Facility Complaints, which is also in our division, followed up on complaints we had received that two incontinent residents with bed sores were not getting adequate care. We sent an inspector to follow up at that time. The investigator found two additional residents and cited the home for three care violations and for having inadequate staff to complete the work. Shortly after that, July 26th through 29th of 2005, we did our biennial licensing survey, and that was done by a team of surveyors. It was a combination of various teams. They were out and they issued a total of 29 correction orders. As you know, Mr. Chairman, members, there were legislative follow-ups after that survey. We did conduct a monitoring visit after that and then did our official revisit in December of 2005 and found them to be in compliance, that they had corrected all of the things that we had cited. State law, the licensing law, requires us to do inspections or surveys every 2 years for state licensure. We had committed and agreed with the legislature last year that we would do that on an annual basis for the Minneapolis Veterans Home. So we did go in again in November of 2006 to complete another on-site survey. This time we had a total of 26 correction orders as compared with the 29 from last year. The team this year, I was asked in another committee, the team was not a special team particularly. It was just one of our groups of surveyors. It did include members from one of the Metro teams and also members from the St. Cloud team. That was done not so much for any particular reason other than our workload, and we try to bring in surveyors as we can use them. We found several areas of improvement between the 2005 survey and the 2006 survey. Among those, we did not have any findings this year related to improper restraint use. We did not have findings this year regarding inadequate oral or dental care. We did not have findings regarding adequate numbers of nursing staff. We did not have findings regarding kitchen sanitary conditions. And there were also improvements we noted with housekeeping and maintenance of the buildings. There were a number of concerns, of course, out of those 26 citations. Among those, and Mr. Chairman, you gave a high-level summary, and that was about as far as I was planning to go, but the areas of concerns that we cited, half of those, 13 of the 26, were related to concerns in the delivery of nursing services. This includes the failure to conduct adequate nursing assessments for residents, failure to develop and implement plans of care for residents, and failure to provide adequate nursing care to the residents. Similar concerns had been identified during the 2005 survey in some of those areas, and we certainly hope that the board will be looking at some of those areas. But again, I want to stress that there was not the issue this year of an apparent inadequate number of staff. We still cited some of these areas, but it was not, as last time, attributable to inadequate staff to do the cares. There was a reduction in the scope of some of these problems from 2005 to 2006, which is another, I would say, area of improvement, albeit limited. In 2005, we had identified concerns with carrying out the care plans for 15 out of 27 residents in the sample. In 2006, similar concerns were identified for 5 out of 32 residents in the sample. So, I mean, percentage-wise, that would certainly show a significant improvement. There were continued problems with the delivery of nursing care. We had increased concerns in the area of provision of nursing rehabilitation services. Those would include helping residents to maintain their range of motion and their ambulation abilities, to provide proper interventions to minimize pressure sores, including timely repositioning of the residents, to provide proper and timely interventions to assist residents to maintain their continence, including timely assistance with toileting, and to provide necessary and appropriate assistance with activities of daily living, such as prompt assistance with eating. We also noted that there were problems with coordination between physical therapy and other rehabilitation services and nursing services. There were medication errors noted, as the chairman mentioned, including proper administration of insulin. We cited concerns with the activity program and an inability to provide activities that meet the needs of the residents, which had not been identified as a concern in 2005. We also saw increased concerns in the area of residents' rights, including such basic things as courteous treatment of residents, to assuring for privacy of treatment, and for the need to better respond to grievances and concerns. We also cited correction orders addressing residents' access to their personal funds. Residents had raised concerns about their food variety and lack of menu alternatives, and there also were infection control issues cited again this time. Mr. Chairman, our plan for following up on this, as I'd indicated we did last year, we plan to do a monitoring visit in the near future. All of our site visits are unannounced. However, we have been in communication with facility staff, as they are not required by law to give us a formal plan of correction for how they're going to address the deficiencies. However, they have been in communication with us, raising issues, asking questions, and we've been trying to give them technical assistance in how best to address some of those concerns. We will be scheduling a formal revisit to the facility sometime in the near future following an unofficial monitoring visit. Mr. Chairman, that's pretty much my summary at this point. I'm just trying to recap, and if you have specific questions, I will do my best to respond to those.
Well, Ms. Miner, when I look at the vet's home here, and then I look at the one that I happen to be very much involved in, Laverne, I believe there was no fraction. It might have been a small one, maybe one or two in Fergus. Out of the four veterans' homes, it seems to be the biggest and the largest is the one that has the most problems. And I can't accept that. So we got to figure out some way to get that back where the rest of them are. And I'm not going to point fingers at anybody, but some way we got to get the bottom of what the heck is going on here. And I said that last year, and then you come back, and we still have. So I don't know who to, I'm not blaming it on anybody, but some way we have to figure this out.
Mr. Chairman, one of the common issues that we see in nursing facilities, not only in the veterans' home but in other areas, is that when there is an instability in staffing, particularly at the director of nursing level, at some of the other key nursing positions, and even at the administrator level, it does have an effect on the care given throughout the facility. Certainly the, you know, I'm not here to make excuses for them, but certainly we've seen efforts in place in the past year to try and stabilize the staffing. And as I say, our experience in other facilities is that that is a real critical piece in getting the care actually the level that we're looking for at the health department to be delivered to the residents.
Senator Dale.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Miner, you gave a nice report and talked about the 29 violations in 05 and 26, I think it was in 06, and described a lot of detail, some detail about the number of patients between the 2 years. And it's kind of a combination of, I got the impression it was kind of a combination of things that are were maybe better in 06 than they were in 05 for different reasons, even though the violations are still quite high. And kind of, I just would like to ask you on balance, looking at the severity of the violations and the different violations that occurred between the 2 years. I know you mentioned a bunch of them in 05 that have been corrected by 06. On balance, are things worse in 06 than they were in 05, or are they better in 06 than they were in 05?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I'm not sure that I know quite how to compare the two. I would say it depends perhaps on what you were interested in. If you were interested in, there were some more, I think, more basic violations in 2005 due to inadequate staffing and just some real basic cares for residents. However, when we survey nursing facilities, it really is a three-pronged approach. We look to see the assessment that has been done and then the plan that's developed as a result of that assessment, and then finally to see that the plan is actually implemented. And there were areas in all three of those in this survey that were not adequately done to meet our minimum standards. So I don't know. I mean, certainly some of the things, that the fact that we didn't see as many repeats is a good thing, but then the fact that we saw some new areas that had not been issues in 2005 is not such a good thing. The number alone is of concern to us. As I mentioned, this was a state licensing survey and not equivalent to the federal Medicare surveys that we generally do. But when I asked staff to try and look at these and make some comparisons, they indicated that had we been doing this on a federal scale rather than a state, it would probably be the equivalent of 21 or 22 deficiencies. And right now the average for the state is about 10. So certainly this is worse, if you will, than the average. But I really, I just don't feel well enough equipped to actually say, is it better or worse this year from last? It's of concern to us in both years, and it's just different.
Senator Scogin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Miner, you've answered, I believe, one of my questions. The number is unusual. Is that fair?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator, I'd say that's
the other
that's
part
fair.
Of the question for me was just from my own background. You do monitoring in vets' homes, nursing homes. Do you get into assisted living and home health monitoring at all?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, we do. It's the assisted living surveys are done by our case mix staff, which is a different group of people than do these surveys, but they also are nurses. And then we have a variety of folks within those two staffs who have been specially trained to survey a number of other types of facilities, including home health agencies and nursing agencies and kidney dialysis places, hospitals, and just a wide variety of other facilities.
Senator? Sure. Do those surveys look similar when you from building to building, or do they change depending on what you're monitoring? I mean, does home health have similar surveys that they have to meet compared to a vet's home?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, there are different regulations governing each of those areas, which is why some of our surveyors are specially trained to survey some, and others are trained to survey others. The two that compare the closest, as I said before, are just the Medicare-certified homes and the state-licensed homes. Otherwise, there are just there's such a difference in regulation governing them that I'm not quite sure how to compare them.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Miner. Certainly the number of is of a concern. You did mention a couple instances on these or demerits or whatever you call them that raised my thought. You said there was a problem with turning people timely to prevent bed sores. I guess my question is, were there actually patients that had bed sores that should have been prevented by more timely turning? And then the second question deals with this range of motion that you talked about, and is there adequate physical therapy available?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, I have the correction orders with me, and I'll actually have to read them, and I can get back to you before the hearing's over with regards to your first question about whether there were residents with pressure sores that could have been prevented. I have to note that we issue correction orders not only for preventable sores, but also if there's a failure to assess residents for their risk of pressure sores, so I will have to look in the actual correction orders to see the specifics of that correction order. And I'm sorry, your second was about physical?
Ms. Miner, Mr. Chairman, the question dealt with the range of motion. There was a issue that you raised about range of motion with some of the patients, and I was wondering if you could respond to what level of physical therapy is available that should be working with these patients so that they do have good range of motion, or is this a nursing issue, or what is the cause of the range of motion as a concern?
Senator.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, again, I would have to read the correction orders because my understanding of it was that it was more of a failure to coordinate, that it was not so much that that those activities weren't available, but that there was a failure to coordinate among nursing staff and physical activity staff. But again, I'll verify that if I look at the correction orders.
Okay, and it doesn't have to be today. It can be in the future.
Okay,
thanks.
You.
Yes. Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Miner, for coming in for your report. Actually, this is the second time we've had the pleasure of hearing it because I also sat on the health committee that reviewed the same thing. And thank you to the members for joining us today to observe and show support. I'm a former Navy officer myself. I served for 5 years, and I was a Navy nurse. So this is of particular interest to me. As a nurse, it raises flags as I listen to your report because we're talking about coordination of care. One of the problems, and then also not getting patients turned for bed sores. And I think every nurse knows that bed sores are 100% preventable with good nursing care and intervention. And yet, at the same time, you're saying that you have adequate nursing staff. There seems to be a big disconnect from you not able to understand that. If you have sufficient nursing staff, they're doing the job that they're supposed to be doing, you would have nurses or RNs there to coordinate patient care, to do effective nursing assessments, and then to make sure if you have enough staff hired, they would certainly be delivering that care. So can you help me understand that?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, one of the things that we see in surveys quite a bit is that I want to say these jobs are really hard, and I realize that, and there's plenty of work for the entire staff there. But my understanding is that in 2005, it became quite apparent that there were not sufficient staff available, and through the use of pool staff and others, that there just was that helped cause a problem in continuity of care. I guess I would prefer not to speak to this exact survey, but to say more in general that we often are in facilities where there are sufficient staff to do the work, but they may be doing different work, or they aren't, I guess I would prefer that I defer that question actually to staff from the facility, and perhaps they could address that.
Senator Engelbretson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My concern, too, was also the staffing issue. Are you prepared or not prepared to talk about whether you think 2006 you had a staff than you were in 2005? Is that what you just reported?
Mr. Chair and Senator, if you're asking specific questions about the staffing patterns at the vet's home, I think that would probably be better answered by their staff. I'm simply reporting that at least as our surveyors were there, part of what we do is we do check records, we check the staffing patterns, and we look to see who's been on staff and who hasn't been. And so they came away less concerned this year, and they felt that in general there were enough numbers of staff there that they could have been providing the appropriate care.
Hey, members, if you want to see this report, it's public information, so we can. But I think we need to. Ms. Miner, you were here to tell us about this, not everything else in that vet's home. So we got to be sure we key in on the direction. We're going to get to that in pretty quick. So are there any other questions? Remember, her concern here is infractions and not compliance, and that's exactly what's in this. And then we'll move on to see how we can figure more of that. So if there's no more questions, thank you very much. Now we're going to move into the nursing staff at the Minnesota Veterans Home in Minneapolis. I don't know if all four of you want to come up here or if you want to come up one at a time, but why don't we get all four of you up here, and then we will... I need your name for the record before you speak, and members, feel free to ask questions. That's why we're here. This is where it starts, and we'll see when we get to the end how it's going to end. But whoever wants to speak first, welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mary Jo George, and I'm the Government Affairs Staff Specialist with the Minnesota Nurses Association. The MNA represents over 20,000 registered nurses statewide, including approximately 700 registered nurses working in our state service, including at the Department of Health, the inspection nurses, mental health, corrections, and, of course, our state veterans nurses. Joining me today in my testimony are two of our nurses, Margaret Skoy and Paul Tyne, and also our nursing practice specialist, Carol Diemert. Thank you again for holding this follow-up hearing on the continuing care problems at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. Like yourselves, undoubtedly, we are deeply troubled by the second finding of more violations that indicate that we have a nursing care problem. Unfortunately, however, we probably have a different take on what is happening out there. I think fundamentally, we do believe we have a nurse staffing crisis. And unfortunately, we're not sure if we feel the vet's home understands and recognizes the role of the registered nurse in this delivery of the care. And I just wanted to give you just a real brief historical perspective from our perspective. And that is that we think this nursing problem has been a cumulative one. As you heard, some of you who have been here in the past, when we testified in past hearings in 2005 and 2006, we were very concerned with the change of the nursing model at the vet's home. That is where they eliminated a key function of what they call an RN senior role. Practice specialists and the nurses speak more about that. But that role is very key in providing the care coordination and the quality of care. In addition, they eliminated many of the HSTs, the health service techs, which are, our nurses' aides. And we do believe that they have hired back some of them, which is a very important thing. We still feel like we're lacking an RN position. After these cutbacks were made, we saw a deterioration in the workplace. We saw management using excessive mandatory overtime to the point where we were having nurses being afraid of being disciplined and losing their job if they didn't accept the shift, even though they were tired and didn't feel they could provide the care. I think that has eased up at this point, but it was a big problem in what happened in the mass exodus of nurses that left. In 2005, my records indicate that we had over 27 RNs and LPNs leave the home. And we feel like we haven't really recovered from that. Now, I know their vacancy reports only show that they have 5 RN vacancy positions, but I don't know where we're starting from when we're counting these numbers. So we just feel like at this point, we feel like we have a lot of makeup to do. Now, clearly, last year, the legislature, your committee, the governor responded and gave the Veterans Home a $4 million supplemental funding for additional staffing. We were very happy to have that. However, that language that stipulated that they should negotiate with us on the additional staffing, because publicly, our concern with their public document showed that for $4 million, they were only going to hire 1.5 RN, 18 LPNs, and 40 nurses assistants. And again, under our Nurse Practice Act and our state law, the RN supervises and delegates the work of the other nursing staff. And again, Carol will talk a little bit more on that. But last week, I believe in the Senate hearing in Burden's committee, I believe that we found out that they didn't agree to meet with us. We did meet with them. It was a good meeting. They said they want us to be strategic partners, but we weren't clear on what they were doing with the money. And I think what I found out from the hearing last week was that they have hired staff, but primarily additional nursing aides. And we're supportive of that, too. But again, we feel like the RN is sort of a key role. So if it's more money they need to hire more staff, we want to work with them. We're tired of this fight that we feel, and we're worried in some respects that they're going to go back to a process of mandating our nurses. So I brought Carol to join us to talk a little bit more about the role of the RN in that nursing care. So thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Carol Diemer. I am a nurse and a practice specialist with the Minnesota Nurses Association. I have reviewed the latest survey report from the Minnesota Department of Public Health. And from a nursing perspective, a majority of the deficiencies cited are a direct result of a lack of number of RN staff available for assessment, direct care, oversight, monitoring, and supervision of unlicensed staff. I can give you some specific examples. And our position is that the Minneapolis Veterans Home does not have an adequate number of registered nurses to care for this population. From my read of the survey, in a sample of 11 residents that were reviewed, there were 11 instances where the comprehensive skin assessments to prevent pressure ulcers and skin breakdown were not done. In 13 of 30 residents reviewed for assessment to reduce and manage bladder and bowel incontinence, which is a major contributor to pressure ulcers, this was not accomplished. Important nursing assessment measures to reduce and prevent these pressure ulcers are positioning and mobility, nutrition, hydration, medication management, pain control, and resident choice, all requiring the time and skill of an RN. In a study where RNs provided less than 30 minutes of direct care to residents in a skilled care facility, the increases in pressure ulcers, urinary tract infections, weight loss, and decreases in the ability to perform activities of daily living were substantial. The residents in the sample from this survey who were at risk for skin breakdown most often had multiple medical issues like Parkinson's, diabetes, congestive heart failure, chronic renal failure, and cognitive and behavioral issues. In addition to multiple medical problems, the population characteristics of veterans are somewhat unique. Male patients are generally taller and heavier, which makes safe patient handling more challenging for a primarily female nursing staff. In addition to the dementia issues often associated with age, many residents come to the facility with histories of severe emotional and mental health issues which prevent behavioral challenges requiring particular knowledge and skill in their management. One nurse stated, "The mental health issues of a resident got in the way of reasoning. He just was very resistive and yelled and screamed when I tried to position him." So you can see some of the daily kinds of challenges. Adequate time and appropriate skill level is required to appropriately care for this veteran's population. Intensity of care needs may differ. For example, a stable comatose patient may require a large amount of low-complexity care, which may largely be provided by non-RN staff. Another patient, such as a newly diagnosed diabetic patient with cardiac problems who also has moderate dementia, may require fewer hours of care but need the skill of an RN. So numbers and types of nursing staff make a difference. Multiple studies show that without adequate RN staffing, the incidence of infection rates, pressure ulcers, falls, and even death result. The patient safety literature further documents that these increased rates of morbidity and mortality are most often system cultural failures rather than individual clinician failures. And there's documentation for that. So the solution needs to be at a system cultural level rather than any punitive corrective measures focused on individual frontline caregivers who are already struggling under the current system of staffing. Our position is that the Minneapolis Veterans Home does not have an adequate number of registered nurses to care for this population and to meet the nurses' legal and professional obligations under the Minnesota Nurse Practice Act. This statute outlines nurses' obligations for assessment, developing individual plans of care, evaluating the care, and delegating and supervising unlicensed nursing staff. The Veterans Home just does not have enough RNs to provide this level of oversight for management of the care of the veteran population at this facility. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, can you hear me? Okay. All right. Thank you for holding this second hearing concerning the quality of care crisis at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. My name is Margaret Scoy, and I have worked as a registered nurse for 21 years, the last 17 years as a full-time registered direct care nurse at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. On September 21st of 2005, Senate hearing concerning the Minneapolis Veterans Home crisis, I was given the opportunity to give my perspective. Today, I'm here again to give my perspective on the quality of care crisis at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. Leading up to the first Minneapolis Veterans Home crisis of 2005, Veterans Home Registered Nurses and Minnesota Nurses Association raised concerns about resident care and recommended solutions that were repeatedly ignored. After months of inaction in 2005, a registered nurse alerted the state health department about health care concerns on her unit. In July of 2005, the State Health Department cited the home with 29 violations. Soon after this survey, the first Senate hearing was held. The Minneapolis Veterans Home has a capacity for 420 residents. In the days of past, our nursing home residents were admitted at the beginning stages of their chronic diseases. At this present time, the acuity of our skilled nursing care residents is very high. They are admitted with multiple diagnoses, both medical and mental. For example, a profile of a resident in the skilled nursing care unit is an elderly, incontinent, blind, insulin-dependent diabetic, with Alzheimer's disease. And this is just one example as of what Carol had just described. Today, I am here to inform you that we do not have adequate staff to meet the needs of our residents. A critical lack of direct care registered nurses and nurses aides still exists at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. The latest State Health Department survey of November 2006 cited 26 violations, of which 13 were in the area of nursing. 1.5 years after the first Senate hearing, we need to address this question. What changes have actually taken place? Number one, a very minimal increase in the number of nurses' aides. Number two, no increases in the number of direct care registered nurses. Because of this, our nurses' aides and our nurses are not able to give quality care to our veterans. No increase, okay, excuse me, I'm sorry. The Minneapolis Veterans Home Nurses and the Minnesota Nurses Association recommend hiring a charge nurse for each unit whose responsibility would be to monitor the care on the unit through audits, to be directly involved in the care planning for the residents, and finally, to follow up on the needs of the veterans. A significant result of September 21, 2005 Senate hearing was that on June 2, 2006, the Minnesota legislature appropriated $4 million to increase the nursing staff at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. We respectfully ask you to continue to pressure the Minnesota Veterans Home Board to increase the number of nurses' aides and direct care registered nurses in order to improve the quality of care for our veterans. Thank you again for holding this hearing. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer.
I have a question. You said they need a charge nurse on each. For somebody that's not in the nurse field, what are we talking about? Dozen, 10, 15, 20?
We're talking about nine.
Nine?
We have nine units.
I guess that's what I really need to understand, nine units. Okay. Any other questions? Mr. Skoglund?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Ms. Scoy, one term you used was to do audits, I believe. Could you just for me to explain what that would be?
Yeah, that would be a nursing audit where you would go around and make sure that the cares were being done. For example, with skin pressure, you would be involved in going into the rooms and doing the skin assessment, even making sure that what was the care planning, that the care plan matches what is on the HST's sheets in order for them to be doing the job that they should be doing for our residents. So it would be a person who's directly on the floor watching to make sure that things are done, and that if there is a problem of skin, if there is a problem of incontinence, that these needs are followed up on.
Senator Oregon.
Two questions, actually. Maybe the Department of Health could answer one of them. When you look at charge nurses, if you take a typical nursing home other than a veterans home, is it common to have that many charge nurses on a shift? And kind of the follow-up is, when I think of a charge nurse, I'm thinking of a supervisory position more than hands-on patient care. And I think hands-on patient care is what we need.
Mr. Chair and Senator, when we're talking about a charge nurse, excuse me, how our hierarchy is we have a supervisor. And then we have what we'd like to have is, and what we had previous to all these problems that were coming, you know, that were cited. Long ago, we had a charge nurse that was responsible for the floor, the direct care, making sure things were being done, and auditing if there were problems like incontinence or bed sores or behaviors. We have a lot of mental illness behaviors. How could we help a person through a mental illness crisis? And so it would, we have our units, our in the building 17, we have 50 residents on each unit. Okay, so we're talking about one charge nurse per 50 residents, plus a supervisor, plus three nurses working direct care staff. And we can see that when we had this in place, we did not have the citations that we have currently. In fact, these last two surveys have been the very worst in the 17 years that I've ever been there. We have had zero citations when we had more registered nurses working.
Can I just clarify, too, the issue with supervisory? Every RN has direct supervisory responsibility under their license. They are responsible to directly delegate to unlicensed staff and to supervise those staff. And, you know, so it's not – it's a direct care activity. And even a charge nurse that might oversee, it would be the oversight of direct care, of making certain that the unlicensed folks, you know, were doing what was on the care plan. So it isn't a supervisory in the labor sense that we're talking about, but every nurse under their license has supervisory responsibility because they delegate and are responsible under their license for what the unlicensed persons are doing for nursing care. So that's what somewhat confused. It's not management.
Follow-up question, Senator?
Yep. Are the supervisors within each unit registered nurses, or are they medical professionals?
They are registered nurses.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Ms. Goy again. I guess, you know, what I'm wondering is, you know, are your staffing requests or your current staffing levels, are they similar to those of other homes that are not government-owned, or at least not state-owned, and, you know, I assume because of the fragile nature of so many of your patients that you have 24-hour care. So with the number of people then being nine RNs per shift, or is nine sufficient?
We do believe that if we had that extra nurse as an overseer, that would be sufficient. We would like to see more nurses' aides on the floor. We think that that's very important also.
We have one other person on the end. Maybe you want to add something to this?
The position charge nurse is also known as RN senior. Before 2001, there would be nine positions. It was a Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 position. So it would be nine positions.
I need your name for the record so we know who you are.
My name is Paul Tyne.
Okay.
I'm an RN at the Vets Home.
Thank you. Senator Wergens.
Mr. Chair, I just heard Mr. Tyne say that this would be a Monday through Friday 9 to 5 position.
That is what it was previous in 2001 when we were rendering much better care. They were there to provide that direction, and that's been lacking. So I'm basing it on that.
Senator Wergens, follow up.
Mr. Chair, then it does seem like it's more supervisory than hands-on patient care.
They're on the units. They're not in meetings. They're not in an office. They're on the units. They're the eyes that are monitoring that duties are performed.
Well, again, members, we're not here to criticize the board or the nurses. We're here to follow up these sanctions and see what we can do to get this backward. So I want you to understand that. We're not here to point fingers. We just want to be sure that the corrections are corrected.
What the supervisors
do. Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to kind of follow up to Senator Wergens, what are the staffing levels that we currently have here, are they commensurate with other homes? Is it about the same, or is this a unique situation that we have only in the new office home? That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, going back to the description that you were just giving us about what was going on previously and things changed, what was the reason for the change? Why did the change get made? Why were there the charge nurses and then they're not? And who made that decision, and what was the rationale? So maybe both of those things. First of all, what is this level of staffing currently in place approximately the same as other kinds of institutions of similar nature, or is it unique? And secondly, what was the reason for the change that you described here?
The difference, you know, in terms of the staffing levels, it is very difficult. I mean, most of the recommendations on a national level are per skill mix per patient. For example, they're recommending 0.75 hours of RN time per patient. And it's really difficult to compare because there's different kinds of populations, and there's not really an adequate comparison for skilled nursing homes, especially by types of populations. So I think even the health department is having, and some of the ways they monitor staffing, the comparisons are sort of like apples and oranges sometimes. That's part of the problem because of the change in populations. I don't know, Margaret, if you have anything to add to that. The health department might have some additional information about comparisons.
The rationale that was cited for the removal of that position was budgetary restraints.
Senator Dimsey, do you have your hand up?
Mr. Chairman,
I think Darcy Minor from the health department might want to answer that question.
I'd like to return to the stability of staffing issues that previously mentioned and take us to retention and salaries and that arena. You know, in my district, I have a lot of nursing homes visited, most of them in this past year, and a continuous topic of discussion was the inability on the part of nursing homes in general to recruit and retain LPNs, much less RNs, on staff. How does the Veterans Home, the Minneapolis Veterans Home, pay scale, if you will, and benefit scale, compared to other nursing facilities in the state? And if you can remark on this, I don't know if you have that expertise, compared to other nursing homes in the state. And how do you see the competition with hospitals and other medical facilities in your competition to recruit those critical needs?
Well, I think you've hit on two important issues here. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Senator. I think you've hit on a couple of really important issues here. Stability of staff and then also monetary compensation for working as a nurse. Long-term care nurses do get paid less than hospital care nurses. That's just always the way it's been. I will tell you this, that with a nurse, if she feels that she's able to do her job adequately and that she can give good care to her patients, they don't leave because of money if they're making a comfortable salary. There are a lot more rewards to nursing than that. And in terms of stability, in 2005, we had 27 nurses leave, mostly registered nurses, leave the facility, quit, within a matter of 6 months. That was pretty devastating. And that was mainly due to the fact that they didn't feel they could give adequate care, but also because we were being mandated to work 16-hour shifts, even though we felt we weren't able to. We were mandated, and we were being given an oral, a written, suspended, and one of our very competent nurses was actually fired because of refusing to be mandated because he felt he could not give good care to the residents. So the stability, we have lost about, I would say, actually I have a list of the names and the units of the nurses that have left since June of this past year, and there are eight. These are long-term care nurses that I have worked with for years, 10 years, maybe even more. I don't know specifically, but long-term care nurses that I've worked with for years. So it's really disheartening to see them leave. Did that answer your question? Okay.
Okay, Senator Vigerman, Senator, is it Gimsey? Sorry about that. It's probably data that we would have to get to actually see the comparison. I think in terms of state workers at the vet's home, I think they get paid more than probably registered nurses in the private sector, long-term care, but not as much as the hospital care. And I think one of the attractions is the pension through the state. So there's some incentives for trying to retain some of these nurses, and I think so they probably have a better opportunity than the private sector nursing homes. But I would have to dig up some research and see how that compares, or else the management may have that.
I do know one thing, that it does cost, the latest data, it costs an annual nurse's salary to replace a nurse. So turnover is very costly and expensive. And in this shortage era of nurses, retention is a huge issue. So it's costly. Yeah.
Ms. Miner, are you still here? Well, you just stand there a minute. There was a question to ask about the pay raise or the pay schedule. I don't know if that's your department. Somebody asked that question. I don't know who it was, but
Staffing. I think you want to see.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I asked that question.
Okay.
And it related to what I've seen out in my district, certainly, and I know others have, as far as nursing homes in general.
Yeah. Or Darcy.
Wow. Mr. Chairman and Senator, I'm not sure that I can enlighten you much on that. At this, all that I have here today would be more just anecdotal information, which would certainly parallel yours, that this is an issue that actually we've seen, for example, in southern Minnesota, in the Rochester area, turnover seems to be higher, perhaps because there are more medical alternatives for nurses to go to. As I mentioned before, this is very difficult work, and although it may be very rewarding, if there are alternatives, I would suspect that the turnover is higher. We don't impose a particular staffing ratio And so if you were to inquire of numerous different nursing homes, they manage their staffing patterns in all different ways, pretty much around whatever is available to them. Some of them will have, you know, the director of nursing as well as charge nurses, and others do not. So I guess at this point I don't have information that would suggest that there's a normal staffing pattern, but I certainly would concur with you that our anecdotal information would concur with yours that it is challenging both to recruit and to retain staff.
Well, members, I see three hands. I'd like to ask some questions, but if they are not directed right to Ms. Miner, then I'm going to put the nurses back and we'll start again. So, Senator Corn, is there directly to her?
Well, it's kind of more of a comment.
Senator Corning, why don't you wait till we get Ms. Miner off the spot there? And I think the rest of you, is that okay?
Mine is.
Okay. Thank you very much. I don't know. I didn't think you could answer. Well,
excuse me, Mr. Chair. My question is directly for Ms. Miner, if that's okay.
Pardon?
My question is directly to Ms. Miner, if that's okay.
That's what I asked.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Ms. Miner, are the levels of care, the assigned levels of care, in other words, the A through K, the same in a veterans home as they are in any other long-term care facility? My mother-in-law just passed away, and her level of care is assigned by the need. Is that the same in a veterans home as it is in any other long-term care facility?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I'm not sure that I'm understanding if you're talking about the case mix or...
Basically, yes.
And I would have to defer to someone else. I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that. I'm assuming that it is, but I really don't know.
Okay. Well,
I'll check, Mr. Chairman. I'll check with someone and get back inside in just a moment.
Sure. Okay. Unless the questions are directly to Ms. Miner, then we're going to move back to the next section. So thank you very much. Now, who?
Paul Kiewert.
Senator Erickson Rolle, you're first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you to the nurses for your testimony today. It's particularly difficult, I think, for people to understand the differences between the supervisory functions of the nurse and the nurse's supervisor. Uh-huh. And so I think you did a good job trying to explain that. But my question is related to nurses here are supervisors. Administrators,
good
as
question.
Opposed to direct care nurses who are supervising them. And this is a problem not just unique between boards and nurses, but also between boards, the school boards, and teachers. But there are many teachers working within a school system who are in administrative positions, but they're teachers. But they're not functioning as classroom or direct teaching functions, but they're counted in the overall number of teachers hired. Do you have any comments on that sort of thing, too? Are there nurses in the system at the homes that are nurses who are working strictly in administrative positions? When you tally up the number of RNs hired, it looks like there's a lot of RNs, but they don't have direct.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, we did an informal tally, and it's about 20 RNs that are full-time positions that do not have any direct resident contact.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up question?
Yes.
Thank you. So these are nurses who are hired full-time, and they're working in administrative positions.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, correct.
Thank you.
Senator Coring?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think that Senator Vimsey actually hit on something that I've been thinking about since we had the hearing in Senator Berglund's committee. I've been down to the chairman's district, down to the Laverne vets home, which is a model nursing home, and I say you're doing an excellent job up there, and I've been up to Silver Bay. These are the main
kind of the almost the main employers in town, or one of the main employers in town, and I think there's a lot of people that want to work there, and there's a lot of pride in working there. And I'm just wondering if we're hitting on something here where there's such a demand for healthcare workers in this large metropolitan area that maybe we're not paying these folks well, you know. And I know that people that work at nursing homes they're caregivers. They're not necessarily working there for money, but yet they still need to have a decent wage that they can feed their family. And so I think that's something that we should look at, is because I think the Veterans Home Board is doing an excellent job in Laverne and Silver Bay and Fergus Falls. And so I'm just wondering if somehow we need to pay more. You know, there is the nursing homes do get paid. There are classifications, metro, rural, and deep rural, where nursing homes are paid more. Metro nursing homes are paid more than, let's say, Morrison and Crow Wing County. We're considered deep rural, and I'd like to get that classification changed. But anyway, that was just my comment, Senator Vickerman. What I would just say that's something that we should think about, that there's such demand here down in this area that's something we should look into.
Senator Engelbretson, you're next.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I've been in county government for over 30 years and been involved with three unions. Please enlighten me, if you will, what being mandated to work 16 hours means and where that comes from.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the contract language says emergency. They have the ability to go through a seniority list and say, okay, you've worked your 8 hours, but I don't have somebody to work the next shift. I can mandate you. It's supposed to be for an emergency. We've had a lot of chronic unfilled positions, so our perception was that it was used at times as a staffing technique. It's gotten better, but this was about a year right before the last survey in 05. It was very commonplace. We still have it. It makes it hard to retain staff when you mandate them.
Do you understand what mandation is, where we work 16 hours? So a nurse comes on her shift. She's not prepared to work. She's prepared to work her 8 hours. She may have children at home, or he may have children at home, or other issues. And a supervisor may walk up to a nurse or nurse's aide 5 minutes before the shift is over and say, you're mandated to work. And the nurse will, she can say no, but there's a great fear of reprimand. We have a history of a nurse being fired because of that, of nurses being, and nurses' aides being suspended. So it is a scary thing. And if you're a nurse and you really have worked 8 hours, you're tired, you feel like you cannot give the quality of care that our residents really, really need. These are chronic people with mental illnesses. They need a lot of energy for the employees to do a good job with. So that's what mandation is. That is correct. It's being used.
8 hours of actual nursing is a lot of physical work.
Correct. And Mr. Chair and Senator, it is used to fill. We have a chronic lack of staff. We have for many years now. Mandation is being used to fill the holes.
Senator Chair, I would like to just say, too, the latest data is that anyone in a healthcare profession that works more than 12.5 hours is seen at risk in terms of patient safety issues. So there's data out there that shows that, in fact, if you work, I think it's 16 hours, it's like a 0.5 alcohol level. So, and also the nurses are under grounds for discipline, and one of the grounds for discipline is failure to provide safe care. And if a nurse feels like they cannot provide safe care because they're fatigued, they have the right and the responsibility to refuse that assignment. And the liability for this, I think, is going to be on the institutions as well as the nurse if this continues. So, you know, it's not allowed in hospitals in this state. So mandatory overtime is a huge problem.
I want to take probably one more question from Senator Erickson Robes, and then we need to move on because there's quite a few people who have to get through this schedule. So, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is just a frightening thing to hear about, actually. We're talking about potential medication errors and personal work injuries that could happen, too, because people are tired and overlift. So, thank you. I made a note early in your testimony before this even came up. But it's my deepest hope that there will not be any kind of personnel or personal repercussions for any of the testimony given by staff here. I have lived through a few times in my life when it's either happened in a school district or in a nursing situation where if you have employees speak up, and I don't know, and I'm not meaning to suggest that there would be, but I don't know what the relationship is between the board and staff. But it's my sincere hope that because people come forward with testimony and feel free to speak out and share some of your perspectives in daily life, that there would not be a workplace consequence or a professional consequence because of this. So just put that out there.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Now we're going to ask Arthur Murtis, Chair of the American Legion Department of Minnesota Rehabilitation Committee, if he would come forward. Welcome to the committee, and I state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rickman. I'm from Deer River, Minnesota. I serve with the American Legion as Department Vice Commander, serving here on the Rehabilitation Committee for the Department of Minnesota Legion. This year I'm currently serving as the Chairman of the Board. In this position, I think I've been involved somewhat with the board, the directors with the Minnesota Veterans Home. I have visited many of our veterans homes throughout the years, our VA facilities. And I have some observations concerning this veterans home. I believe we're sitting here, everybody's beating the bush, trying to aim instead of fixing problems. I sincerely believe we have to sit down as a group, take our state agencies, let's work together with our state agencies and go out there and fix these problems. I certainly respect the health department. I think there we have some very knowledgeable people there. We also have some very knowledgeable people at home in Minneapolis. Our board of directors for the veterans home are very knowledgeable people. Yet getting our problem solved. I think what we need to do, get a new perspective, look at the horizon. Maybe there are better ways to solve these problems. I certainly think that the state agencies that are funded by our state should be probably working closer together. Instead of the health department going down there and taking a report and press and getting the hooplas, maybe they should come down to the veterans veteran's home there and work with someone. Let's say, here's our problem. Let's work them through and let's get them fixed. I understand that, you know, they do perform a very important function with our private rest homes, et cetera, in their state. These are not funded by the state. Now, these are two agencies funded by the state, and as a result of that, I think they should be working together. I know they do have some mentoring facilities there for that. I think this is probably one of the prime things we should be doing. Another thing that I see there, the most of the directors of these veterans' homes state that they have no funds available for a recognition of their employees. I think that's terrible. You know, I think the most important thing for an employer is to recognize their employees and have something there available to be able to do that. They say it's been mandated by Congress that they cannot do that. Perhaps we should take a look at that and come up with a program. Perhaps they could go out and say, yes, we're going to have a recognition program here, and I think it'd be good for the morale. Another thing I see with the morale, I don't believe that I would like to work for a place where the press comes out and they say, wow, we got 31 violations here. Well, what a bunch of dirty dogs, huh? I don't think I'd like to work there. What is the attitude of the people like that? I think we need to get a little better image, a positive image, and what's going on. I think the press maybe should be encouraged to talk about the good things when it does happen. We never hear that. How about the rest of the four rest homes here in Minnesota? They're all good. I didn't see anything there in the press coming out and say, hey, look at this. Boy, they're doing a tremendous job out there. Maybe we should look at these things. I have nothing more to say. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Mercy, you ought to serve in the legislative body and see what the press thinks about us. They never report the good things we do.
I certainly believe that.
They certainly pick up the bag. So thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you very much. Now we're going to have the Minnesota Veterans Home Board come forward. I want to stress again, we're not here to criticize. We're here to figure out some solution to what the problems that we are hearing about.
Mr. Chair, if you'd be so kind, we need about a minute here to fire up.
That's fine. That's fine. Take a minute to pass out a few things. While you're setting it up, members of the audience, I know for sure that two senators had another commitment. They had to speak at an occasion, so I just want you to understand they'd love to be here, their hearts here, but they had another commitment that they had to go to.
Apologize, Mr. Chair. If we'd have been on queue first, we would have had that ready. But while Dan's getting that queued up, most especially, as already has been presented, thank you very much for the opportunity. May not think so in a little bit, but we're anxious. And I think a lot of the questions that have been presented by your committee through the presentation, there'll be some answers for some of those questions before you even leave here today. So we have been afforded the opportunity. Oh, for the record, Jeff Johnson, Chair of Minnesota Veterans Home Board. Sorry, sir. We've been afforded the opportunity to oversee the agency for 460,000 veterans in this fine state of Minnesota. We take that very seriously. But I would like to start, if I may, sir, and assurances to Senator Erickson Ropes. We have made every effort to ensure our transparency, to ensure that we have information available not only to bodies like this, but to our governing board and at every level at our employees. As a veteran, as a Vietnam vet, with the board, with fellow veterans, that is their right for anyone to come before this body, and there will be no consequences. We all need to work together for a common solution. We are a team. Some of you are going to hear the same thing because you were at Senator Berglund's committee hearing last week. We have made some additions because of the questions that were asked there, sir, for your benefit and your committee, that hopefully we'll be able to address some of those things. If I may, Senator Vickerman, I would like to recognize a group of people that are here with us today. We found that it's been very beneficial to bring as many as our team. I can't know everything. I don't want to know everything. So to bring those key assets, I look at it as a basket of resources that we have with the individuals on staff and our board. So if I may take the luxury, sir, I have behind the pillar Larry Greenberg, who is the chair of our finance committee. There's Larry. Bill Rooley, who is a member of our board, and actually you confirmation hearing is next week with you. Nancy Dahl, who's our human resource director for our agency. One of our new members on board out of Minneapolis, Carol Gilbertson, is assistant administrator. In the corner is Jim Ingersoll, another assistant administrator that's come on board. Very pleased to introduce Bob Wicken, who is our permanent administrator out at the Minneapolis home. His finance director, Erickson and Anderson. Okay, close. There's a lot of names to remember. Board member Byron Opstead. Byron is the chair of our quality assurance committee, and they met this week while we're up here. Well, we have Dennis Foreman here, who is also an employee out of Minneapolis, but here I'm sure representing DAV also. Violet Wagner has been on the board with me. We happen to be the two senior members at this time. Dean Ashman, who worked with us with the Special Review Committee last year, and when I was asked to take over as chair of the board, I specifically asked Mr. Ashman to chair the Special Review Committee. Affectionately, I probably won't say his nickname today. Sitting at the table with me here, oh, she's hiding. Sandy Larson, many of you know, is our legislative liaison as well as the public relations director for the agency. Sitting at the table here with me is Dan Williams, the vice chair of our board. Pam Barrows, who's one of the senior employees way back to the Blue Ribbon panel that helped develop the Veterans Home Board from the beginning, our administrator down in the Laverne home, but also as an individual that I selected for the transition team as we look for and recruit. Mr. Chip Cox, who is the administrator of the Hastings home. Chip currently is in the position of the interim executive director for the agency. Who have I? And you've already met members of the staff out there. Do you want me to proceed, sir, or do you have... I feel like I overstepped you there. I'm sorry.
Mr. Johnson, I want you to proceed, and I've got a list, and I maybe won't have to ask these questions if you already have part of that in your testimony.
Most definitely want to entertain any and all questions that may come before, but it may be beneficial if we can hold on some of those in anticipation. There are some slides that deal with many of the questions that have already been addressed here this afternoon, And then please, if there are other questions, we would like to entertain those. First and foremost, sir, you and I have had the opportunity to talk in my office down in southwest Minnesota. There is no one more disappointed, no one more concerned, disturbed with the unacceptable report that we recently received. Our board takes this very seriously. Our new management team in Minneapolis, who's accepted this position during this crisis, is passionate to the point of tears in trying to come to get down to the basic levels. And that, I think, is an important thing. Ownership has been accepted throughout the entire system at every level. We will get this fixed. I feel comfortable with what's going to be presented to you here today, that you hopefully will have a better comfort level. At today's board meeting this morning, we weren't able to discuss some of that last week, but at today's board meeting, the board took action. One of the things that I've tried to do as the chair is to ensure that the board is actively involved with some of those decisions that they need to be involved with. As we look at total accountability, they need to be part of that decision because some of them are big. And we'll be addressing some of those since they were approved today by the board to move forward. The other thing I would like to remind, and I think a couple people already have here today, we are an agency of five homes. And I think that's important. We currently have a situation where we need to expend a lot of energy in Minneapolis, but we are an agency of five homes. Of course, our board office is right here in the Capitol grounds in the Veterans Building. But the home in Laverne, as you've already said, Senator, four of these right now, today, can be considered models to the industry. Laverne's most recent inspection was zero deficiencies. That's almost unheard of. You heard the state average is 10. Fergus Falls this year, their survey was two deficiencies. The survey previous to that was zero. Hastings, of course, typically is zero deficiencies. Silver Bay is an area that way up north in an older facility. This year, we are extremely pleased to announce that this year, Mike Bond and his crew up there, the administrator up there, had only three deficiencies. Exceptional. Very proud of that. Minneapolis, of course, is the reason we're here and to discuss the progress that has been made. There's a lot of new senators and representatives that are gracing the halls of this fine building. So if I may, to some of the key findings that came out of the survey and the HDI report last year. One of those being, and I think it's important, because we can't do it without every level of employee from the grassroots all the way up. But a clear strength was found in all five of the homes and the deep commitment to the mission and the vision of the homes by all our employees. Overall, the quality of care and the level of services provided to veterans and their dependents was considered high. Staffing levels by the HDI survey as well as others in the various homes were well within the expected levels for nursing facilities and the domiciliary care facilities. Of course, last year we had the joint Senate hearing with your committee, sir, and Senator Berglund's. That was in March. Since that time, there's been quite a few changes in the management. We've heard that management's an important key integral part, and that's permanent management. And that's where we feel extremely fortunate as we are going to introduce the new team here. We've had two interim administrators during that time since last year. We've had two interim director of nursing during that time. Numerous other nursing management changes. And also with the interim administrators, we did not have a full complement of the assistant administrators that are needed for such a large facility. We're very fortunate to have those new ones on board. Truly, the board has accepted the responsibility of governance as we were chastised for in the HDI report. We take it very seriously. It was a wake-up call, not only for everyone, but specifically for us. The new committees that were put in place, the Special Review Committee specifically, as a watchdog for the initial actions out at the Minneapolis campus, but also to start opening the box up and looking at other things and necessary items. Our finance committee has probably been a very interesting, very enlightening situation for our homes. Mr. Greenberg and his committee have been very diligent with their CPA backgrounds to ensure when we look at the budget, we looked at what are the true needs. And as we were directed by yourself and many other senators and representatives, how are you supposed to help us if we don't truly tell you what we need? We did go with the guidelines that the state requested, the finance department. They've been very helpful. We found, as Mr. Mertes has said, the agencies need to work together. One thing that has been beneficial for me as the new chair of the board is when I call upon another agency, and fortunately, because of the position, can talk to one of the commissioners, we have gotten hands-down cooperation from every department that we've had to deal with, and that's been helpful. The Quality Assurance Committee, the finance, we gave that, but it was right down to the level. We presented what we were supposed to the finance department, but then also what Larry and his group, Mr. Greenberg and his group, and we put together, here's what you've asked for, but here what is truly needed, and here is why. They actually complimented and got up and shook our hands in regards to, great, people can know. I'm going to, whether it's appropriate or not, sir, but I think you've been asked, and you were up there last Monday. One of the things that's truly going to be a benefit with the finance is if the governor's military initiative for this year goes through. There's some extremely wonderful things in there for the Veterans Home Board. The $8 million that's been proposed for repair and betterment will help us and assist in many, many ways, as we'll discuss later, some of the things that we feel the technology to make available to our staff that will help the resident care as well as them to accomplish and complete their mission in caring for those residents. The Quality Assurance Committee meets today. We're currently in a recruiting process to fill the QA position within the board office, and we'll address that later. Probably one of the most dynamic changes and one of the things that we can be extremely beneficial in what we've seen since Mr. Wicken has come on board, Carol and Jim as the two new assistants. Margaret Sukraj would be here today, but unfortunately her brother has passed away and she's had to go and deal with family matters, is our new director of nursing. Margaret accepted this position as well as Carol and Jim right in the middle of knowing Minneapolis was a very difficult situation to walk into, but walked in with the passion and that fresh set of eyes, that new look that's truly needed. When Bob came on board and we were able to recruit him, we felt very fortunate because we had a person that not only had the background in this industry, but was a true people person. And we were able to see that and the other places that he's been through the references. It was very, very clear. And that's part of the effort to make sure it's at every level. Part of the effort to ensure that I came up through the ranks. I can remember washing glassware back in the military and hoping I could be a lab tech, and then I wanted to be an administrator and get into that level. It needs to be at every level. And that's what I think Bob can help us bring, and that's one thing that the board has stressed frequently and often. The team's roles and responsibilities are being truly defined by this new management team that works directly with members of our transition team. Pam Barrels has a background as a registered nurse. Chip has been with the agency for 28 years. I don't know if that's what made him gray. And with that comes a lot of knowledge and opportunity for them to help this new crew that really doesn't have the government background, how to get through, what's the proper procedure. But the outlook that they're bringing and working together, as well as the outside homes, we're looking at calling in all the resources. Last week, Pam came up. And when she came up, she called and says, Mr. Chair, she says, you know, why don't I bring up one of my key people and see if they can work with Bob and his staff on this bowel and bladder assessment, B&B. One of the things that we found out through that process of peeling back this onion, it takes 3 days to do an assessment for bowel and bladder. Okay, as a board member, even as a former administrator, I didn't realize it took 3 days. And then an additional day to put that documentation together. One of the things that that's going to benefit and help is to look at, does it really need to be 2 hours? Can it be 3 hours? And maybe a few of them don't need it at all. We need to get those matrices in place. This team is doing that, looking at the systems, looking at the processes to include staffing levels so that we can proceed forward with good policies, good procedures, and ensure that the education is in place at every level so that the individuals truly understand this is my purpose, this is the reason, this is my job description, whatever you want to call it, so that they all have an accountability level, as the board does, as our agency does, at the board office, at every level. And it's hard to do that if you're really not sure what you're there for. Reporting structure for the board has truly been enhanced over the last couple of years. A lot of things are in place. We continue to fine-tune that, but on a monthly basis and a very timely basis, the board is getting some of that information from these committees, and especially like for the Quality Assurance Committee to report to us today that each one of the homes still has their QA, QI program in place, working within their independent homes. And once we get this full-time QA person re-recruited for the board office, then they'll interact. But Byron got that committee together, and they did do their discussion and looked at some of the trending, because that's a key indicator for us on the board level. Data collection from the finance standpoint, and as far as the turnover rates, we have some slides that are coming up to address some of those, have been very helpful so that we can ask the difficult questions. We have a board right now that, I guarantee you, sir, they will ask the questions, and it's not a good old boy, there's discussion, and there is understanding of coming to that decision. One of the key things that I think has been very beneficial is a monthly review in our board packet of the resident and family council minutes. There's been a lot of work done with those resident councils and family councils to ensure, and we continue to work with that. Another team member, I look at this whole works as a team. This is part of the team. The news media, I think Mr. Wolf was here. We're all part of the team. That media gets the message out to these 460,000 vets. Trying to work with the different agencies. Cheryl with the Ombudsman at the last committee meeting. I finally got to meet her face-to-face. And we'll work with those folks. We all want to come up with the same thing, what's best for our veterans. We want Minneapolis to be like the other four. So when we were fortunate today, sir, with the national commander for the American Legion stopped in and visited at our board meeting. We met him this summer. Dan and I spent about 2 hours with him at the homes put on the national convention. It was here in Minneapolis to help out our fellow people down in New Orleans. We had an opportunity to meet Commander Morin at that time. And today for him to stop in was very helpful. He happens to be the commandant for the homes in Massachusetts and to sidebar and some of that discussion with him. But the resident and family council minutes give us that first opportunity to see what are the residents asking for, what are the concerns, what are some of the issues, so that the board can go to Pam. I'm going to pick on you. Pam, have they dealt with, they want the menu in bigger type, they want it in bigger print. If a family council, and we've had have some where they're expressing gratitude for the fine care that's being given, and that happens more than a concern of, is there enough staffing? I think we'll see from some of the slides that the staffing levels are a lot different than they were last year. One of the questions that we tried to anticipate was, where did you actually spend the $6.2 million that the legislative body gave to you and made available to you to assist you through the crisis last year? Of that appropriation, $4 million plus, as you'll see in the, you won't have that slide, but actually $4 million was signified to go towards the nursing salaries and the requirements and the needs for the additional HSTs and staff that were needed. we actually end up spending more. I believe, Mr. Greenberg, correct me if I'm wrong, it was an additional $500,000, $4.5 million, what was actually spent to ensure that we were trying to get those up to an appropriate level. The mock survey, of course, the HDI report was an expense. The next page shows the remaining balance where some of those additional monies went. The resident workers' minimum wage, resident transfer equipment, that's actually some of the lifts that our staff felt that they needed to have enough lifts available, the patient lifts, so that they could move these residents and do some of the cares and the necessary things. So some of that funding went towards purchasing, I don't have an exact number for you, a number of lifts for the home. Staffing increases non-nursing in Minneapolis, Laverne, and Fergus Falls. For example, Minneapolis, there was a couple of painters hired because some of the deficiencies were flaking, peeling around the window seals and some of the door jams and some of the painting. So those type of issues could be dealt with. And then try and set up a program, and Mr. O'Gorman can probably answer to that better, but he's actually, they've established some different programs so that it becomes a routine and not a crisis issue. Being proactive on what needs to be done. Again, the governor's initiative with the $8 million in repair and betterment can go an awful long way in all five of our homes to start dealing with some of those, what may seem small issues, but they can become citations. And, of course, we all experienced, whether it be in our personal homes or in our businesses or within the government with all the buildings they have, the energy costs. There's been quite a bit of discussion today in regards to staffing levels. We can look at statistics all day long, and we can go to the, there's a couple websites that are available through the Department of Health, through MAHA, where you can see the averages. And that's part of what we have our people work on, not to just look, okay, well, we're above average, so we don't have to worry about it. But I think one of the things today that was discussed is how do you come up, it's acuity levels, the A through K. So look at acuity levels. And one of the things that we've really tried and keep asking the question, are we basing staffing on acuity levels? You don't always get the answer you want, or maybe you don't always get an answer, but at least it's continually being asked. We can compare ourselves to the others, but I think it was very well brought out here today. The majority of our population is male. And if you look at that, that's going to be an increased amount of need for staffing as far as the lifting, the transferring, and whatever. In addition, we have a veteran population, and many of us vets have baggage, as I call it, whether they be mental health issues, chemical dependency issues, PTSD, whatever word you want to put with it. That does take additional time and the interaction with those residents. But if we look at our staffing levels back in July of 2005, and I'm not going to, Senator, sit here and treat you like you can't read. So I'm just going to go straight to the bottom line there with the total FTE change so that you can see and your committee can see where some of those staffing and some of those dollars actually went. In essence, it was a total of 44.8 FTE. Very obvious that majority of those were in the HST, the nurses' aides. That's truly where the need was addressed to us, not only by HDI, but in the survey report. There were a couple additional RNs that were hired. Additional to that, you know, when we read and see 35 citations, one of the things that I think it's important, and it's not to try and poo-poo any of it or that none of these are important. They're all important. Please don't get me wrong. But we're two separate entities out there, the skilled nursing area, and then there's a domiciliary. So that's two separate inspections. You got 26, and thanks to the health department, they did stress that today, 26 in the skilled nursing area. There were 9 in the domiciliary. As a board member and my fellow board member, where were they all? I mean, were they every one of them direct patient care and nursing? comfort level, whatever you want to call it, but that's part of the statistical peeling back of that onion. We look at finance, dietary, and the activities, social services, and then the ones in nursing. You know, the criteria that the state follows, and we said that last week, we'll say it again, and that's how I used to greet them when they would come to my facility back in my administrator days. I look at those folks as unpaid consultants. They're not picking on us. They're not the enemy. They're like this unpaid consultant that comes in and helps you see some of the things maybe you're overlooking. It's part of the team. So that being said, the nursing ones are a real concern. Of most particular concern to all of us were the repeats. Quite frankly, I don't know as we'd actually be here today if it wasn't for some of those repeats. The incontinence issues, the skin integrity issues are unacceptable. They're disturbing. But there are some things that we feel that we can put in place, will be put in place, and some of them have already been put in place that will address those issues in a more timely basis. Specifically, one of those being these bladder scanners. We were very fortunate today, the V4V, which is Veterans for Veterans, which was part of the funding that was received from the sale of the Big Lake. It's veterans organizations that will be in charge and control those funds. They have a new grant that's available with some of the actual interest from those funds, and that's the only thing they'll spend. We got a presentation on that today. We're excited. The board has given them direction to our executive director and to Pam on the transition team. We're going to put a grant in. We're fortunate that we know quite a few of the board of directors of the V4V, and a couple of them happen to be on our board, and go after these bladder scanners. We've talked privately about that, Senator. These bladder scanners right now, there's only two in Minneapolis. That's a big facility. So for our staff to truly be able to utilize that valuable resource, that tool, to be able to go into a veteran's room, I mean, not every veteran's going to be able to respond. They're not at certain levels of their health that they're going to, yeah, I need to go or not go. This bladder scanner will allow them to scan that bladder and determine whether or not, do you truly need to be catheterized? I don't know about everyone here, but I don't want to be cath if I don't have to be. Plus, the additional time that that takes. So it's a win-win, specifically a win for that individual, whether it be the veteran's spouse that's in our home or that veteran, but also a time saving for that nurse caregiver, that caregiver, that if I know I don't have to cath this patient and I can document that now, then I can give resident B some more time. So to put those tools in place, another tool that I think is going to be extremely beneficial and the board is very anxious to get the information on is a nurse call system that is in definite need of replacement out there. But that nurse call system would be similar to these Blackberries that I see everybody walk around with up here, and it beep, 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 beep. Each ST would have one of those, and that's going to be linked back, and I hope I'm not getting this wrong, and one of my true people that knows it, but that will beep, and it's time to go see Jeff. Well, now it's time to go see Dan. It's time to go see Pam. To give them that little warning or that nudge that needs to be done. That ties back to a software system that's going to afford the opportunity that isn't getting done. So that supervisor, and then a report can be developed, what's going on? Do we have residents this week that's got the flu in that particular area? And that's where that HST needs to come and say, my 10 are all really tough today. I can't get them done. And work together, and that supervisor then can have that. But the biggest thing, to help them get to those areas that they need to be. So we're excited about that. That's an area that we will definitely pursue once we get the final information. And some of the testing, or not actual testing, but the review of some of those systems is actually, I find out today, Pam in their home down in Laverne has actually looked at two, and they have another demo, was this afternoon or today. Once we get that, the leadership team, which is our five administrators in our homes, can look at it and make some type of recommendation back. Initially, Minneapolis is the critical area that we need to put that in. Where are we at now? And again, I want to repeat, one of the greatest things we got right now is a new management team in Minneapolis. A great group of people with a vast amount of background and knowledge that can look at the systems and processes. Also developing relationships across the way with the VA hospital. We've been afforded the opportunity by Mr. Kleinglass, who's the CEO out there, to work with our administrator and develop some of that exchange of information and ideas for the education. Why recreate the wheel when they're willing and they have it available to share with us on some of the training issues and some of the education issues, and that comes at no fee. Very beneficial. So the staffing improvements have reduced the agency's use of nursing, contract nursing. It's based on the resident acuity. Use of mandation has decreased since last year because it was unacceptable last year. You are going to have, and I remember snowstorms, I remember people calling in sick in my small facility. That was over 12 years ago. Unfortunately, sometimes that happens. But one of the things that I can assure you is it's not a routine that we're acceptable to, and it's one that our HR department is not happy with, but sometimes it does happen. It's part of providing the 24/7 resident care that we're mandated to do, whether it's the vet's homes, civilian home, or the hospital. My wife's an RN and now a PA, and I can guarantee you when she's on call and stays in the ER all night, she's concerned also, but unfortunately, it does happen. We've increased and built, I like to think, relationships, bridges, opportunities of discussion with the local labor representatives. Out at the Minneapolis home, they've went from a quarterly meeting to a monthly meeting. I think that's important to develop as a team the solution because we all have to be part of the fix. We're not all part of the fix, and we can't buy into the ownership. And if we don't buy into the ownership, we can't have the accountability. So it's got to be a win-win for everyone that everyone can live with, and then I think it can be successful. One of the things that there's been a lot of work done on, and Mr. Mertes addressed it, we as a board have addressed it, it's a concern. Unfortunately, as a state agency, we can't say, okay, we're going to dedicate $250 this week, and by God, we're going to have an ice cream social. We're going to let our people know we appreciate them. We can't do that. We are looking at different avenues that may be available. But again, we don't want to be embarrassed by doing something that perhaps we're going to get our hands slapped. CHIP is working with people in other state agencies to ensure we've had veteran organizations, that are very willing to make a donation into a private where it would be with them if one of our volunteer service coordinators or our HR people think we need to do something. We need to recognize these individuals or we want to do something special that they might be able to go then to this little foundation or this outside group and say this is what we want to do and they're going to bill you. They would have to approve it. They would have to agree to it. But we need to make sure that we're going to that's going to work. If it doesn't work, Senator Vickerman, the next time you're down in my office, maybe we can figure out how to make that work because it is important. In order to build esprit de corps and morale, you need to be able to do more than a pat on the back on occasion. The state does afford an opportunity to do an annual employee award type thing. Dan and I have attended a couple. They're great. But every now and then it would be nice to do something. So the employee council they work with, I think one of the things that has really impressed me out at Minneapolis is the employee newsletter. The employee newsletter has also become a tool of additional education opportunities, short and quick, but as reminders to some of those things that we as caregivers need to be constantly aware of. Some of the positive trends, as we look at the turnover rates, And you can go to websites and you can see what the current turnover rates for outstate and for the metro area. Last year, if you remember, sir, our turnover rates were atrocious. They were terrible. When Nancy Dahl from our agency put these figures together and I looked at them, I said, whoa, are you sure they're right? Yes, we feel comfortable that these are accurate. You can see that they're lower than the outstate and the metro. And last year they were higher. I'd like to think that that's part of a good place to come to work. That's part of having in-place leadership. Everybody needs someone to direct and lead them. I may be the chair of this board, but I still have to take direction from this agency and my lovely wife. That's just part of life. That's part of life. These are good things. I see that as a positive trend that maybe that is becoming the place to come work, like the Laverne, like the Silver Bay, where in the Fergus, where they're one of the biggest employers. Needless to say, the benefit structure for the state of Minnesota is pretty good. But that's where a lot of the expense goes in our budget also. When we look at the turnover, and I think a slide that maybe we didn't spend enough time on last week is where are the individuals going? Why is that happening? That is a concern. It's expensive to retrain people. No one wants to retrain. You need to hire the right person up front. We all know that. Got to be the right fit to that family. But through attrition, and you can see on the slide, non-certification, if you're not familiar, you haven't made your probation for whatever reason. Resignations could be for numerous reasons. Moving out of the state, moving out of town. And I'm not going to deny what MNA has said. Maybe somebody's just not happy with where they're working anymore. I mean, we have that happen at the county all the time, where I work. So there's reasons for some of it. Retirement. So that's where some of that breaks down. And not all of those, I'm led to understand, that are considered turnover. If you look at the HR people, whatever. The other thing I think has been brought up here today and hopefully can answer part of the question, I forget who asked it, but looking at some of the mandation, the mandation at its current levels, we have seen a reduction in that, and I think that's a good thing, and that's something that we will continue to work on and work with. Exciting news here, and for those of you who were at Senator Berglund's hearing last week, these numbers were somewhat higher. Nancy Dahl and the staff out of Minneapolis have been very busy doing interviews. Last week, I believe the RN was 5.08 as far as vacancies. They recently, since last week, hired, or the 2nd, January 2nd, the figures were 4. Now that's at 2, and you're going to have vacancies and openings. LPN at 1, HSD's at 9.8, and I believe that was close to, Nancy helped me, 13, 14 last week. 9, AST, RN manager. What was that? 2. So there is some headway being made there, and for individuals to want to come on board and start working there, because even though we're a big agency and the metro is a big place, people do talk to each other. How are things going out there? Is it a good place to be, or am I walking into more trouble? There's a slide there for the mock surveys. Mock surveys have been a valuable tool, a very valuable tool. That was part of the HDI recommendation. Mock surveys have been done in all the homes. The one in Minneapolis, they've been there twice. But the board has took action today. When we look at zero deficiencies in Laverne, zero deficiencies in Fergus, zero deficiencies in Hastings, is there really a need to expend those energies out to those areas where we know we've got a pretty good thing going? Or can we maybe look at HDI coming, focusing on some specific issues and areas at Minneapolis? The board has agreed today and given direction that we will talk to HDI. And the Laverne trip, the Silver Bay, we'll at least have one more up there. just to get a comfort level. But the rest of the energies then, we can focus in on specific things at Minneapolis. Additional oversight, but possibly some additional education for our staff or some additional comments on here's some suggestions. Of course, our committees will continue. That goes without saying. They've been a valuable asset, not just to the board, but I'd like to think to our staff to be able to get some of those things through on a more timely basis. The reporting requirements, you know, whenever you get a report that looks good, that's great. But there's still some of those reports that we want them to be very easy to understand, very quick and dirty, if I can use that slang. That's something that Larry is working on with the finance people. Byron will continue to work on with the Quality Assurance Committee. And the board, if there continues to be a question on a certain form or whatever, try and change it so that you truly understand it. You have a comfort level. Currently, we have the national search going on for the replacement of the executive director to fill that position. That has been a process that's been not quite as fruitful as we had hoped. The candidates that we've gotten, we have a couple that we feel very good with. We've interviewed a couple. We got two more that will be coming our way, and hopefully we'll be interviewing those within the next 10 days. One of the directions that the board and that we have been brought to us by different veterans organizations, by different businessmen, is the requirement that the executive director be a veteran. When we talk to our recruiting agency, you know, what's one of the biggest challenges you got with this position? They have sent out thousands of requests. They've gotten 300 to 400 of interest. One of the issues becomes not being a veteran. Limits your pool. The other one, of course, is salary, but that's something we have to work with and the levels that are within that. Through discussion today with the board, and we have had sidebar discussion with the Commander's Task Force last Saturday, needed to buy in before we even got to a level where we wanted to discuss, is the requirement of having the executive director being a veteran necessary? A lot of the comments I got from many of the veterans that know me well enough, they just call it the way I see it. Definitely one of those. Is I think it's more important that the chair of that board be a veteran. Right now, by the current regulations, it's not a requirement that the chair of this board be a veteran. The board took action today to pursue legislation that the requirement for the executive director to be a veteran be removed, and that the chair of this board has to be a veteran. Of course, we will look at the executive director be preferred that they are a veteran, but I think our pool will open much more. The other thing that I will allow, and one of the things that we have worked on, is the succession planning within the agency, whether that be at the home level or within the board level and the agent and the board office level, is succession planning. The administrators in our homes throughout the state, there is not a requirement to be a veteran. Some of them are not. I've never met more loyal, more dedicated veteran advocates. So that is what we will, now that we've got the board buy-in and the board made a resolution today that the chair and vice chair will work on moving that forward with our transition team to have legislation put in place that would remove that requirement. And I think long-term, it's not going to help us this time. We won't get it done. That, you know, the candidate pool, hopefully we get these two more and we can get to some final interviews. But for the long-term future, and that's what this board has truly tried to look at, do some long-range planning for the future so that when we're gone, some of these things are in place and we've got some of these things fixed. So that I'm sure you'll be seeing that, and we'll have further discussion on that. Some of the things that have occurred since the last hearing and during the last hearing that I'll just throw up there, but the status of the Minneapolis admissions, we didn't actually And that's one of the, every time you have one of these, you think, okay, we got to give them everything. What? And we got back to the board office, did a briefing, got to even mention deferral of admissions. One of the things that the board, and that was on the recommendation of the transition team, the staff out of Minneapolis, the entire crew, wasn't mandated, was to defer admissions at the Minneapolis home. More than one reason for that, but a couple of them would be, let's make sure we got a comfort level before we're bringing more people into our home, that our new team, that the this transition that's taking place, looking at the systems and the processes before we start bringing more people in. Allow them some additional time. They've redirected some of the staff that are involved with admissions into this bowel and bladder assessment to try and get them done. Because we're not looking, sir, at just those that were cited in that state report, you know, because they'll list resident numbers and whatever. That's not good enough. And that's not good enough for them, people out there, but not good enough for the board. We want to ensure that each and every resident is going to be addressed so that there is a new assessment in their record. That takes time. You heard me say it takes 3 days to do an assessment. And I don't have the exact figures how many they're getting done, but it's like 40 a week. That's going to get them all done. And then, again, that'll address, does it need to be 2 hours? If there's not a good assessment, it's 2 hours. And maybe Jeff only needs three. Maybe Chip needs to be looked at every hour. So action today by the board was continue that deferral. Transition team working with the staff out there will make a decision, hopefully before the next board meeting. And that's a comfort level of the staff there. The staff and Mr. Wicken today came and said, we're ready for more DOMS. DOMS is ready. That's the domiciliary. We don't need to hold all admissions. We're ready for people to start coming back into DOMS. So the board took action today that the DOMS, probably next Monday, they will start admitting back into the domiciliary. Good sign. We're still going to defer admissions at this time to the skilled area. One of the things that was brought up last week was the LED therapy, and that's for the bed sores, the skin integrity issues. It's something new, but Carol's got a background in it. Going to be some more investigation. Remember the senator's
Senator
name?
Coring.
Senator Coring, and he's not here, brought that up. We'll sit with them. If that's one of those things that some of these new funds that we got coming that we could possibly use and it's truly going to be a beneficial thing, we'll look at that and the board can make a decision. Yes, we can or cannot afford it. And if we can't afford it, you've told me time and time again, Senator Vickerman, you got to let me know. That's what we'll do. Statewide opportunities, when we look at outstate, no, that's a bad word and I'm supposed to say it, but I just did and I retracted or whatever. But when we looked at the entire state and the things that are available to veterans throughout the state, of course, we have our homes. But again, the working with the Department of Veteran Affairs, Commissioner Dyrud, Deputy Commissioner Mike Puglisi, and Reggie Worlds there, who has had a big impact on the outreach services available. Some of the things that this initiative will do is allow some of those grant monies to come to that county level. As a service officer back in Jackson County, I'm excited. Some of that money might be able to come down and we can deal with some of the issues and some of the needs statewide. We don't have vet centers in every town, only the large ones. We don't have some of those things available, but maybe 3-4 counties can work together and we can have some of that more readily available. Training, of course, is never ending. What we want to ensure that through the proper training and that there is the good training in place, that we have the adequate staff in our education department and deal with that. Process improvement, productivity, you've heard me say that over and over, and that's where this new team with a fresh set of eyes can look at the systems and the processes. The bladder scan, that's an exciting thing and I think can be extremely beneficial. The additional funds, we can't say thanks enough for last year. So far, we're waiting, as every other agency is, to see how we fare out in the new budget process and the recommendations. We feel comfortable that the not what they asked for, but what we truly need is truly being looked at. feel comfortable with that, but as soon as we know, I'm sure we'll be back and discussing that with you again, because that's going to be extremely important for part of the needs throughout this whole agency. Employee recognition, we've already addressed in the legislative language for making funds available, and Senator Vickerman, that is that $2.2 million that was legislators said, yeah, you guys use this to fix things, but then interpretations or whatever, now it can only be used for capital assets, but that wasn't the intent, so it's sitting there. We do have Senator Torres Ray is wanting to sponsor that and get it a fast track through. We mentioned, Senator Vickerman, yourself, that if there's anything else that's needed. So we need to get that changed so that we can start doing some of these projects that we're keyed up to do, but the funding doesn't allow, that interpretation doesn't allow us to utilize that funding the way it needs to be used. So that should be a quick and easy. But we'll continue to work on the things. I do need to say a special thanks to the veterans organizations, not for just being here today, but without them, we truly wouldn't be able to do some of the things that we do. For example, the picnic thing in Laverne, the nice area down there. Every one of the vets organizations donate time, money, and energy to help us with the mission of caring for the residents.
Mr. Johnson, I'm looking at the clock. I know it's an important meeting. We don't want to cut it off, but I...
I'm done.
Washing the clock. I have probably three questions myself, and then I'll take questions from the board, from our committee, I should say. And my first one is going to be about the nurses. You hired how many are direct care and how many are administrators? Can you tell me that?
Senator Berglund, if... I'm thinking how we answer her question. Senator Vickerman, if you would not have any objections, if I could, I'd like Pam Barrels, a member of our transition team. She's got more of that and probably be more accurate. That or Nancy Dahl, one or the other.
Ms. Barrels, the question was how many were hired for direct care and how many were hired as administrators?
There's how it breaks down is there's the nurse manager, there's nine on the current, there's nine nurse managers and nine FTE, full-time equivalents. 2.8 RN seniors, 42.7 full-time equivalent RNs, and that's up to the 54, whatever was on that slide, 54.5. So that RN, that's the breakdown.
Okay, thank you. I have one other question for a little bit. What action has been taken to ensure that residents are informed of their right to file a grievance and to receive a written response to their concerns? What I'm hearing out there, they write a concern and nobody ever gets back with them to the response, and I can't accept that. Is what am I missing here?
Nor can the board, sir. Initially, if I could address that with the resident family council, but assurances that the board, I'm going to ask you if Jeff Cox can address that one.
Mr. Chairman, the Minneapolis Veterans Home has spent quite a bit of time in revamping their grievance procedures. They have a very good procedure that is now in place that assures that residents will get answers to their questions. I'm very, very confident what they've put together will work and will assure that residents' needs or concerns are addressed timely.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, you were here before us last year, and we talked about this problem. And I come down and I did visit with you, because the governor was upset, I was upset, and so were other people upset at what went on with that veteran's home. And I said, I want that straightened up, and it needs to be corrected. And a quote that you make, and I'm going to go back, like they say, what you say, sometimes the paper doesn't print it exactly right. But from what I got out of that, You said it's going to take 2 years to turn things around. You are not going to get 2 years to turn things around. I'll guarantee you're not going to get 2 years to turn around. I got to have a faster turnaround than 2 years. I'll give you time to do it, but that's totally unacceptable to me, and I bet it's unacceptable to this committee. You don't get another 2 years. You got a year. Supposed to change. I'll give you better credit for that. I'm certainly not going to give you two more years to change things around. Maybe I didn't read it right. Maybe you didn't mean what you said.
If I may.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I believe when the discussion, the 2 to 3 years to turn things around, it's not acceptable to this board. It's not acceptable to the staff out of Minneapolis for 2-3 years. But to change the whole culture set, not necessarily rectify those problems with skin and the skin integrity and the incontinence issues. No, sir. Absolutely not. That's got to be weeks, months, now. No disagreement. But to change the culture set, the systems and the processes from a decades-old problem in Minneapolis is not going to change overnight. That's what was meant there. And that comes to us from individuals that are in the business that actually go in and do turnarounds, where they'll go in, for example, in Wisconsin, they went into a home, HDI, very similar circumstances. The actual resident care and some of those issues were dealt with immediately, like it's being done as we sit here right now at Minneapolis. But the mindset and the culture in that environment, in that facility, took them 2-3 years. We're not going to change a decades-old problem in Minneapolis overnight. The resident care issues need to be dealt with. But as far as the morale, the policies, that whole skill set for individuals, it's not going to happen. And I am will sit here and on behalf of my board and everybody within this agency agree with you. It's unacceptable. No one doesn't want to be here any worse than this group of people that have got untold hours in trying to correct this thing, and we thought we were going to be much better off than what we were and not have to be here today. And I can assure you we will continue those countless hours, and we will continue to do the things and build the relationships with the different agencies. We've made every effort to be readily available to discuss with the different representative bodies of all our employees. We all got to buy into it, because it's not one group. It's not one group of people. It's going to be all of us that have to be part of the solution. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
Mr. Johnson, I hate to be critical of you, and I'm not going to be, but I'm just upset in my own mind that hasn't straightened out quicker. This committee here will be looking at the governor's big veterans bill. Not my bill, but we'll all be part of that big veterans bill. In order to do that, we got to be sure we're all on the same page. And that's my concern. So if you need money, maybe this committee can find some money for you. A lot of it will have to go through Senator Berglund's committee. But a lot of that money comes from this committee. We have the budget part of it. So in order for me to go before the powers to be and finance people, I have to have a good reason why you need X numbers for this, X numbers for that. Because regardless of what you see in the paper, that all that money's out there, that's not really a true statement. I think we can find some one-time money, because I've already met on some of these issues that we want to do. But again, I got to have some action done quicker than 2 years. You can take care of the nurses. You can do that. It'll take 2 years for that. Changing the whole system. But you have to remember that while we're doing this, there's a lot of veterans fighting over there right now. And I just hate the thought of them reading in a paper how bad that this veterans home is. It should be a jewel. It should be a jewel, and we need to get it back to that. I'm willing to give you some time, but I'm not going to give you 2 years. So I had some days in my mind. I won't bring that up because I think we need to talk with the department, Health and Human Services, see how much they can expect you to do. It doesn't take a genius to change somebody's bed clothing, and it doesn't take a genius to shut the door when somebody's going to the bathroom, and a few of those simple things we could do very easily.
Overnight.
Not the main thing, but those simple little things that a lot of that report in here is.
I would not disagree with you, Mr. Chair. Not at all.
And so, members, do you have any questions? Senator Hamm?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Johnson. I appreciate your service and allowing us to come here today and talk about a difficult issue that we're all concerned about. I'm a little concerned, though, some of the testimony we've heard today is conflicting, and I'd like to get some resolution of that. When the nurses were up testifying, they were describing currently that things have not changed significantly from last year is what I took. They talked about a quality of care crisis. They said that their recommendations were being repeatedly ignored, that there was inaction. They talked about a need to have 9 charge nurses. Currently, there are none, apparently. They also said that the RNs that are on staff, 20 of them have no direct resident contact, which is about 40-some percent of the staff. I'm not sure if that squares with everything I heard from you. And so I raise the question in my mind is what is going on here that we're getting very different stories from nursing staff than we are from the board? And the truth must be in there somewhere, but I'm not quite sure where it is. Can you help us with this? Would you describe the nursing care as in crisis today? And what is the status of RNs? Is there a need to have 9 or 10 additional? Do we need to have funding to do that? Or what really is the source of the disagreement?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn, if it's all right with you, sir, I'd like to have our HR director, as well as Pam Barrows, answer that question, RN to the issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator. I broke down the direct care RN staffing for you. In addition to that, there's a director of nursing, 3 assistant directors of nursing, and there are 2 MDS coordinators, an infection control nurse, and 2 educators, Nancy, and 2 nurse educators. Those would be non-direct care types of support staffing. The and then 5 ODs, which is officer of the day, and we talked about the other ones. If we look at hours per resident day, the peer group average for the metropolitan area is 0.59. Minneapolis is at 0.88 for RN. LPN is Minneapolis is at 0.75 hours per resident day. Peer group is 0.83. And nursing assistants, and this is information that was provided for us by an outside source looking at our data, and it was based on fiscal year 2005 data, so it's a little bit dated, and we're actually would be higher in the nursing assistant, and so that's at 2.52, and the peer group average is at 2.60. So that would be comparable to the July 05 data, and we're farther along than that. So actually, those numbers would be better right now. Does that answer your question?
Your hand.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm not sure if it answered my question. I'm not sure if I understood what all the ratios mean. I guess what I'm trying to get at is the nursing staff are saying that there is this crisis in care that's related to the lack of registered nurses on staff, essentially, as I understand it. And from what you're telling me, are you saying that that's not the case, that there are enough nurses on staff, enough registered nurses on staff? And if so, what is the debate about that we have from the nursing professionals and the board's perspective on what that staff is doing?
Senator Hahn, Mr. Chair, if I may, Senator Hahn, I think one of the things that, and maybe I didn't do a good enough job throughout that presentation, is that part of this whole process needs to be sitting down with those groups, which we have done and which we have offered to continue to do, to come up with solutions that we can all live with. Now, when we're bargaining for this or with that or whatever, we're not a bargaining unit. What we have to look at is the number and staffing ratios, using the acuities, looking at all the other things that we have to compare things to, listening to consultants, listening to outside firms, and that's what they want to look at. I think we are doing that extra step. We have met with that group. We will continue to meet with them to come up with that solution. Now, that may not be as many nurses as that they suggested. I'm not going to sit here and say it will be. I don't know. I have a comfort level right now from what I've been told by outside consultants, by what I've been told by the statistics that you can pull off the website, by what I've been told by our staff. It's not necessarily the number of people, but how those people are utilized, and that's part of peeling back the onion, working with the different groups, coming up with the systems and the processes that truly looks at what do we really need. Because, as Senator Vickerman has said, there's money there. I'm not shy to ask for it. That's been a problem, and it will not be because we've been told and we have a different structure that's my job. That's this board's job to come to you and say, and we've done that. We will continue to do that because then we've done our responsibility as a board to inform you. That's our responsibility, the fiduciary responsibility. There's not enough. And that's what we did with the finance department, and that's what we moved forward. So it probably still didn't answer your question as far as numbers, but I don't think we're at a point where we can say, and I'm not going to get into confrontation. I refuse. We have said from day one, when that report came, it's going to be ownership at every level. We've said that from day one, and I mean that. And I know this board means that they took and accepted the responsibility, the ownership and the accountability. But that needs to trickle down, and we need to work and come to a solution what truly is the needs in Minneapolis, because they may be a little different than what that statistical comparison is in Laverne or Fergus. You have more buildings out there. They're older. You know, so there's other factors that go into it. So, Senator, I'm sorry if we didn't answer that question, but I don't know if there's an absolute answer to it today as we sit here.
Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn, and committee, just to piggyback, one of the things that we were fortunate enough to have when we met with MNA, they provided us with what they had as a recommendation for a staffing model, and that went back to the model that was 2001, while the other activity was looking at a comparison within the area. And this is coming from a non-nurse, looking at how are we with our nursing model. So when you look at the data that are available, we ranked high. But what we did is we went back to the transition team, the interim executive director, and also the Minneapolis staff. We said, well, now, here's what you're saying. And this is a question that we ask on a weekly basis of the Minneapolis management team. Are your numbers, there? And so as we compare industry, and I think it was a 50-mile radius, we are favorable. But we said also, do you have the correct model for Minneapolis? And one of the things that, if you recall from the presentation with MNA, they said, well, the veterans home is unique in itself and certainly the Minneapolis home. So what we said is, you look at those trends, how do we stack up? We were favorable. But they said, how are we doing in Minneapolis? And that's part of that transition where we're going with roles and responsibilities as well. So from a non-nurse and used to do some turnaround thing, hopefully that helps. And other than that, it may be as clear as mud.
Anybody from the audience like to say anything? If not, I'll go back to here. Senator. You have the final say in this place.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you to the board for being here and also the administrators for presenting. It's a long presentation, and we've done it twice now, Mr. Johnson, in a week. So kudos to you for doing that. I want to thank Senator Hahn for his question, because I have the same question. And I do feel that it wasn't really answered, and perhaps there is not an answer today, as we suggested. But I am concerned, after hearing the testimony of the nurses, that we are interested in what your board thinks about their testimony and you as administrators, because you have heard their testimony twice now this week also. But they reflected back on the time when they were fully staffed in a way that they felt they were able to deliver quality care. And then there were some cuts made, and then we got into these quality of care
issues.
So there seems to be a direct link between the number of
appointments, and it's just going to take a while.
Teaching and doing oversight, and then actual patient care themselves. There seems to be a link between that number of RNs and patient care costs. So I guess I would ask the same question, Senator Hahn. Asked, and maybe it's a rhetorical question for today. It's a late hour, but at some point I'd like some continued conversation about potential for increased nursing staff. And I'm looking forward to coming out and taking a tour of the place. I've talked to your legislative chair representative, and I'm interested in. I've taken a walk through the facilities. I have never been there. So please keep us members in touch if the call us. Are very concerned, as we understand that you are, as well as nursing staff. So I look forward to continuing to work together. The only last question I have is, I'm wondering, as we make this larger systems and cultural shift, and we're dealing with some relationships that are a little tense.
Say that.
If you feel that there's a need for a facilitator or someone who can bring all parties together.
Mr. Chair, Senator Erickson-Ropes, I guess I'd be extremely disappointed at this stage of the game to have that. I don't think there's been enough dialogue and interchange right now between our staff and MNA to say that that's necessary. What I do think, though, is we need to keep an open mind, we need to be professional, and we need to develop a solution that we can all live with. And that's not fluff. It works. But in order for it to work, we all have to work at it. To bring a mediator in causes nothing more than additional time and controversy, and eventually morale issues. I would like to think we're all professional enough we can sit at a table and work it out. So, I mean, if that's what we're required to do, then so be it. But I think what we've already done in this short month and tried to accomplish over this last year, I would hate to think that we'd have to come to that. I'm probably talking out of turn. That's Jeff talking as a chair of the board, but I think the board and I have a relationship. We've been family to each other for 18 months and went through some very trying times. But I think we have a team in place, and I think we have a board in place. I don't think I know that is very willing to be very transparent and to work with everybody for a good solution. Long answer, but that one kind of hit a soft spot on me there. Sorry.
Thank you very much we have a gentleman back here.
Chairman Vickerman and members of the committee, I'm just going to say a couple of words spontaneously. I'm not specifically knowledgeable of the issues. I was present at last year's hearings on last year's complaints, and I am knowledgeable to some degree about this year's complaints. My name is Nick Kakos.
Can I get your name? I hate to interrupt, but it has to be on.
My name is Nick Kakos. I'm with Atlantic Post 129, Minneapolis.
Okay.
Our post spends volunteer time out there providing bingo and that for the veterans. My wife's a volunteer out there. And I only want to speak my impression as far as care of the residents and their impressions. They're getting outstanding care. They're very happy. I heard no complaints from them. And these other issues, I think, are secondary. The primary concern is the care of the veterans, and I think that's being done, and I think they're doing an excellent job. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, members, if you can be here at 3 o'clock sharp on Tuesday, we've got some confirmations. We could get out of here even less than an hour. We have to confirm the governor's appointment. So if you're here at 3 o'clock, have enough for a quorum, we can start right out, and we can get out of here early on Tuesday. There's no further discussion, and we are adjourned.